case for argument is FutureSource versus Reuters. Mr. Rossman?
May it please the court. My name is Richard Rossman, and I represent Reuters in this appeal. This appeal involves an impermissible collateral attack upon a final order of a bankruptcy court issued pursuant to Section 363 of the Bankruptcy Code. The preliminary injunction that was issued by the district court is contrary to multiple decisions of this court. The preliminary injunction was also contrary to law in various other respects and required Reuters to perform a contract which had been extinguished by the
police. Could you speak up a little, Mr.
Yes.
Ron? I'm having trouble hearing you.
The preliminary injunction required Reuters to perform a contract in perpetuity and without compensation that had clearly been extinguished.
Can I ask you a question that goes to the rationale that at least the district court offered for her ruling? Namely, as she saw the assets that Reuters purchased under the order of the bankruptcy court came to Reuters encumbered by the obligation of this intercompany services agreement, I guess, which I see you put here on page 16 of the appendix. And as she saw it, they were assets encumbered by an intellectual property license, which is the way she characterized this agreement. Now, if you say at a simplistic level, could Reuters buy more than Bridge had, I suppose the answer is clearly no. But could you explain to me what intellectual property, in your view, was the subject of this ISA and how it got extinguished by the sale?
Well, first of all, very little intellectual property was the subject of the ISA. And I think if you look at the ISA and you look at the amendment to the ISA, you see that this contract was predominantly a contract for the provision of products and services.
Right, so Part C, where we're talking about assembly of information and all of that, you would characterize as services, not
Yes, I mean,
IP.
This was a contract where what FutureSource was selling and what customers were buying was the real-time data feed and the services that went along with it. And as the Ninth Circuit explained in DAC and other courts have found, the mere fact that a contract involves some intellectual property doesn't make it an intellectual property license. Now, when this, when Reuters purchased its assets, first of all, as a matter of the sale order and the asset purchase agreement, these the obligations under the ISA were clearly excluded liabilities because, for one thing, as FutureSource alleged in its complaint, the joint venture between FutureSource and Bridge was an excluded asset under the asset purchase agreement. Under the that same schedule in the asset purchase agreement, all contracts related to that excluded asset were also excluded assets. And under the asset purchase agreement, now section 2.7, all obligations relating to excluded assets were excluded liabilities. Now, we could have had an interesting debate about this issue of whether Reuters' purchase was encumbered by anything back when the sale order was on the table at the bankruptcy court.
So could I give you a hypothetical then?
Sure.
Suppose one of the assets that you had bought had been a software application A, and somebody else had licensed Bridge and allowed Bridge to use software application A. Software is copyrighted, so it would have been a copyright license. I take it that now that Reuters has this application program. It can't prevent this other licensee from using it. Do you think that that could be extinguished?
Well, first of all, it could be extinguished with consent, and here you had
But the license is just a contract. Well, I don't get the magic of the license and why it matters whether it's intellectual property. I don't get it.
When you say,
why can't a bankruptcy sale extinguish a license?
Well, I think a bankruptcy sale can extinguish a license. Now, and I think the best evidence, which reflects how much could clearly have been extinguished, even if they'd shown up in the bankruptcy court, and even if they hadn't consented, is that their whole argument is based on the fact that Section 365 of the Bankruptcy Code allegedly trumps Section 363, because there is a specific provision in Section 365 dealing with IP licenses. However, that section, 365N, completely undermines their case. Because if you look at the text of 365N, it clearly provides that a licensee cannot get specific performance. They cannot compel the licensor to do anything. All that they can get is the right to be free from a suit for infringement. And indeed, their future source relies principally on one case, the Novon case. And when the court in Novon defined what the obligation...
Well, I must say, this reliance on the unpublished district court decision from another circuit really bothers me. I mean, you're not relying
right.
on it.
I agree.
But the attention the parties devote to that case, we keep saying in our opinions, it's no disrespect to district judges, but a district court opinion just does not have precedential effect, because obviously a district judge sitting in a district somewhere cannot make law for the country or for his circuit or for our circuit. So you can forget about it.
I will pass that and turn back to 365N, because
do answer one question I have. I'm unclear about Moneyline's role in all this. Moneyline seems to have bought something. Did it just buy a revenue stream of some sort, or what?
Your Honor, could I answer Judge Wood's question?
Yeah, sure.
Come back?
I didn't mean that.
It'll take me 1 second. In 365N, if you look at the legislative history, it also makes crystal clear that all a licensee can retain, even where the section is applicable, is the right to use in a purely passive way IP in the form that it existed on the date of the filing of the bankruptcy. So here the notion that they could use that section to compel a party to provide constantly, second by second, real-time data updated in perpetuity just doesn't make sense.
So that would be true in your view, even if the IP license, as some patent licenses do, covered future improvements?
Yes. I think the law, that both the statute and the law is clear. There is no right to compel a licensor to do anything, even where that statute applies. In terms of Moneyline, Moneyline's role was that Moneyline purchased a basket of assets that Reuters didn't take. Included in that basket were approximately 400 contracts, and one of those contracts was the ISA. Now, the asset purchase agreement between Moneyline and Bridge made clear that Moneyline was not purchasing any of the assets that had been the subject of the Reuters purchase. In addition, consistent with Section 365 of the code, when the ISA was assumed and assigned to Moneyline, the bankruptcy court ordered that Moneyline would perform the contract, perform all obligations under the contract, and in addition, it provided, as 365K mandated, that Bridge, as well as successors, were absolved of any liability.
But does this mean that Moneyline is providing these data to FutureSource?
No, because Moneyline didn't have the data or the wherewithal
What does it mean for Moneyline to have assigned this services contract if it can't perform it?
Well, Moneyline may have undertaken obligations when it assumed that basket of 400 contracts under some of them that it couldn't have performed. And FutureSource may well have a breach of contract claim against MoneyLion. But frankly, what happened here, Your Honor, is that after the MoneyLion assignment and after the Reuters deal closed, the parties recognized that if FutureSource wanted to continue to receive the products and services covered by the ISA, they had to come to Reuters.
But I take it Reuters' position must be that this was fundamentally MoneyLion's problem, to go out and contract with Reuters or somebody else or someone out there in the market to perform under the ISA.
Well,
and there was this interim arrangement in the meantime that you had.
I think it was fundamentally both of their problems. It was a problem of FutureSource because FutureSource wanted the data and the products and the services. It was a problem of MoneyLion because if MoneyLion couldn't perform that contract, they were on the hook. But what happened was that FutureSource came to Reuters. They entered into the interim agreement. It clearly provided that Reuters owned the rights, had the right to license them, and FutureSource proceeded to pay, well, incur the obligation to pay. They never paid the money. In order to obtain the rights for a temporary period and a non-exclusive license under circumstances where several months later it turned around and claimed that they had the right to service in perpetuity without compensation for an exclusive license. So our view is that beyond the collateral attack and beyond the consent and beyond the fact that the arguments under 365 and just have no merit, even if all of that were not the case, that the Reuters FutureSource agreement bars their claim. Now, they have argued that this was not a collateral attack because the obligations under the ISA were allegedly assumed obligations under 2.6. First of all, of the ISA purchase agreement. That is not an argument that was made below. We believe they waived it under both the Pond decision, this course, and the Snodderly decision. But beyond that, the argument is premised on misreading of multiple sections of the asset purchase agreement. In the first instance, they claim that the obligations were assumed obligations because they related to the assets that were acquired. But if you look at the definition of acquired assets, it specifically excludes excluded assets and excluded liabilities. I will...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ross. Mr. Albers?
While you're finding your place, let me just ask you if you could begin where Mr. Rothman left off and explain to us why this case really doesn't focus on these two orders of the bankruptcy court, the sale to Reuters and the MoneyLion. There's a mention in the reply brief, and I don't know if this is still true or not, that the bankruptcy is in fact still ongoing, but even if it weren't, Why isn't this fundamentally a question of interpretation of those two orders?
Because the property left the estate.
But
and this is now a fight between FutureSource and Reuters with respect to property that is no longer part of the estate.
But what's the property?
The property is intellectual property.
Estate? What?
The property
define the intellectual property for me. The same question I asked Mr. Ross.
It's defined in the asset purchase agreement, and it's also defined in the...
Would you mind defining it then?
Sure. It's the bridge station, bridge feed, and bridge channel products. The bridge feed product is a data feed. It's the actual data feed itself.
And what kind of IP is that? It's not a patent.
It's a copyrightable proprietary software and related services.
Is it software or is it the inputs into a software program?
It's both. And both are considered proprietary. And in fact, Reuters itself licenses that type of information.
Well, is FutureSource getting the data or using the software?
Both.
How does it use the software?
Well, it uses the software through the software programs, Bridge, Bridge Station and Bridge Channel. And those manipulate the software, which is futures types of information, into various forms, and they go to desktops of futures traders and so on.
Why do you have to write the data that doesn't exist until next week?
I'm sorry?
Why does FutureSource claim it has the right to data that won't exist until next week?
Because under the ISA, the services agreement, that was our license right.
Well,
and that license right includes providing the data feed as it changes.
But
Reuters knew that when it purchased the asset, the intellectual property, and it knew it would have to continue to provide that information. And by the way, Reuters provides this information to all of its clients. It doesn't provide it just to us.
What if you belong to the Book of the Month Club, and they have a contractual obligation to send you a book a month? Do you have intellectual property interest?
I would say no.
Right.
But there may be.
No, you don't.
When you buy a book,
your answer was correct. You don't acquire intellectual property when you acquire a book. You acquire the physical copy. You don't have any intellectual property rights. You can't copy it. You can't sell it. You can't modify it, and so on. So you were right. So how is this case different?
Because it is intellectual property here, which we licensed.
Yes.
Both software, which is considered proprietary, and it's also copyrightable. So we do have a license to intellectual property. And I don't think you're going to hear from Reuters that what they licensed to us under the interim agreement, what they purchased
is not. Is some computer code that you need in order to receive the data from Bridge?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning of the question.
The the software you're talking about, your intellectual property, is some computer code that you need in order to receive, decode, download the data you get from Bridge. Is that what you're talking about?
I think that's
about?
Part of it. I think it's all.
What's the rest of it?
It's both all one product.
What's
that's
the
how
rest
it's defined.
Of it?
It's the data feed.
Data feed meaning what?
The actual stream of data. That is provided.
But that data, as such, are not protectable as intellectual property.
I think it is, Your Honor.
Data are not. You know the Tassini case in the Supreme Court. Even databases are not copyrightable.
The data that is put together by Reuters and the futures exchanges that Reuters contracts with and licenses from, in that form as updated, is proprietary and that is intellectual property. The data itself, before it's manipulated, I agree with you, is not intellectual property. But the value of it, and the whole reason that
you're saying this data feed that you get, this is like a data compilation, something with enough creativity so it's not like the phone book. And then what are you entitled to do with those data?
We're entitled to sell it to our customers.
So you resell the data?
We do.
You resell in the form you get it from Bridge?
We do. Or as manipulated by the software, yes. And that's what Reuters does. They contract with the futures exchanges. They take the data. They then manipulate it, and they sell it to us. They consider it proprietary.
You're taking the shocking position, though, that Reuters, from now until the end of time, has to keep making its work product available to you where the money you pay goes to Moneyline for it. So they have to do it for free for you, and Moneyline does nothing but cash checks.
Well,
I have to say, I mean, that maybe that's what the law amounts to, but I find that a stunning proposition.
My answer is that we had intellectual property rights. We clearly had license rights. And
in Reuters' work?
On the property that Reuters bought was subject to our licenses.
What if Reuters went out of business tomorrow? Would it be breaching its contract?
No, because the ISA says specifically if you stop providing the service to all customers, you can stop providing it to us. So it's eminently fair. I would say the shocking proposition is the opposite. We had intellectual property rights, which we had a license to, and Reuters bought the property to which that intellectual property was subject, and we got nothing for it.
I don't understand that. I don't understand why a license to use intellectual property is different from any other contract.
Because under Section 365N, there are specific rights if you seek to reject that particular type of contract in bankruptcy. We have the right to assert and have continued performance. That makes it different. And the reason that's important, Your Honor, is in conjunction with 363F1, if you're going to have a free and clear sale in bankruptcy, it has to comply with non-bankruptcy law. Non-bankruptcy law in this case is well-established, long-established intellectual property law that if you sell intellectual property, You sell it subject to extant license agreements. This goes back to the Thomas
Edison case. This has nothing to do with intellectual property. This has to do with I mean, it wouldn't matter whether it was a license for intellectual property or a regular contract, would it?
Yes, because this is a license, because under 365N.
Forget 365. You said you're talking about non-bankruptcy law. What is the special status of an IP license in relation to other contract rights in non-bankruptcy law?
The special status is that under intellectual property law, those license rights are construed to go with the intellectual property. It's the same thing as a piece of real estate which is subject to leases. For example, this building, let's say there was 100 tenants, 100 leases in this building. Under Reuters' theory, when the building is sold, then you can sell those tenants out on a free and clear 363 sale. The answer is you cannot. Those tenants have rights under 365H, similar to 365N, and that property is sold subject to those tenant rights. The analogy is under IP law, if you sell a piece of intellectual property, a patent, a trademark, a piece of proprietary information, software, a copyright, you sell it subject to that lease, subject to that license. So Reuters knew when they purchased this property, they were buying it subject to our license.
So you see, that's why I get back to the scope of the original sale order. It seems to me you are identifying very serious questions about how much did that order cover, exactly what IP licenses were burdening the assets. What was the IP? How much did Moneyline get? There are a lot of questions, which may be very serious questions, as to how one allocates these rights back and forth, that the bankruptcy judge may have thought were clear, but which may, at this stage of the game, not be so clear.
They bought Bridge Station, Bridge
Channel. You know the answer that you think, but the other people think differently.
Well, they won't tell you they didn't buy Bridge Station, Bridge Channel, and Bridge. They'll tell you they bought it.
It's the encumbrances that we're arguing about, right?
Yes.
Isn't that part of, you have just finished telling me that they could only have bought the part that wasn't encumbered, if you will. They bought subject to the encumbrances,
right.
And so there is a dispute about what they bought that you are urging.
They knew they bought subject to our encumbrances.
You don't, well.
You know how they knew that, Your Honor?
You can say that. But
because the day before they closed the sale, our contract was assumed and assigned to Moneyline. It was affirmed. It was considered and construed by the bankruptcy court to be valid and binding on the debtor and its successors. They knew by that order, they knew by that action, that they took subject to our contract rights.
So Moneyline paid $10 million for 400 contracts. Reuters pays $265 million for these assets. Does that make sense to you?
I don't know what the deal is between Moneyline and Reuters. I don't know whether there's some accommodation between them or not. That's evidence within their control which they haven't brought forth. What I do know is that they purchased subject to our rights. And what I also know is that the bankruptcy court order required assurances of performance from Moneyline before they would assign that contract. According to their theory, Moneyline couldn't perform. That would be contrary to the bankruptcy court order.
Well, Moneyline might have lied to the bankruptcy court for that matter, and you might have the case against
them. Well, I think we have to construe that order is legal and that there was a basis for it.
The
basis for it is that they could perform.
You're arguing about whether Moneyline could live up to its representation. That's not anything I know anything about.
The APA, the Asset Purchase Agreement, says, this is at Future Source Appendix 95.
Well, didn't the bankruptcy court say that Moneyline has provided adequate assurance of its future performance under the assumed contract?
Yes. And the only way the court could have made that conclusion is that Reuters was going to perform because it took the product subject to those licenses. Otherwise, that conclusion would be contrary to law.
How do we know that's what the bankruptcy judge thought without asking the bankruptcy judge?
Because that's the only reasonable construction you can make of that order.
Why?
It is established intellectual property law that you take intellectual property subject to extant license rights.
Reuters is not a monopolist in this area. There are a few other services out there who do the kinds of things Reuters does.
Yes.
So Moneyline might have thought it was going to contract with one of those. Why couldn't it perform every obligation under the ISA as long as it had a data flow like that which Reuters now controls?
Because it didn't have the software, Bridge Channel or Bridge Station. It couldn't provide those data feeds through that software. It couldn't manipulate the data through that software. So it had to be subject to our license rights.
Why does it have to be through that software? Why couldn't it give its customers comparable software so they could get exactly what they wanted to buy.
Well, I suppose that's like Word versus WordPerfect. I mean, it's close, but it's not the same, and so...
What was your fee arrangement with Reuters? I mean, not with Reuters, with Bridge, before the bankruptcy?
The fee arrangement with Bridge was under the ISA, and I think that I can't remember the exact consideration. We each provided property and cash into the ISA, and I think there's also some form of ongoing royalty stream. So we did pay. We gave valuable consideration for the licenses under the ISA. Then that contract, which was not assumed until the end of the bankruptcy, continued, and we continued to pay throughout the bankruptcy. And after the contract was assumed, our obligations go to Moneyline. So my initial point...
So what are you paying Moneyline?
We are obligated to pay them a royalty stream on usage. I don't know. It's based on the...
How much?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Well, what approximately how much?
I think the amount of the fees from the bankruptcy through the beginning
annually.
Of the lawsuit was about $1.2 million.
Annually.
It would be around $1.5 million annually.
So let's see where we are. You're supposed to pay $1.5 million a year for this service. You're not going to pay it to Moneyline because Moneyline isn't providing any service to you. So you want to have this free forever. Seems a little weird.
The answer to that is Reuters bought the asset subject to the license. If it had the right under its contract with the debtor, with the trustee, to ask to assume this contract, and it could have bought this contract and then had the benefits as well as the burdens that ran with this property. It affirmatively chose not to do that. That is a situation of its own making. It provides, by the way.
It's completely senseless.
It's but, Your Honor, that's what happened.
Senseless. Okay,
that's what happened.
All right. So you're taking advantage of what you... But if it would have been completely senseless for them to have done what you say they did because they're dumb, why would you interpret the bankruptcy court as having stuck them with that? Why wouldn't the bankruptcy court assume that, of course, you know, the service and the fee go together? So
the
service, I think what the bankruptcy court thought was that Moneyline was going to assume the obligation to provide the services since it was going to receive the fees. Not that you were going to get the service forever for nothing. That doesn't make any sense.
I'll turn the issue on its head. Maybe it'll make more sense for you. Maybe not. We had a contract. We provided valuable consideration for the license rights. We continue to provide that consideration throughout the bankruptcy. Our contract was purchased by Moneyline. We continue to provide consideration after its purchase. Reuters...
You're not paying Moneyline anything.
Well, we have an arrangement with Moneyline with respect to that payment and whether there be an offset for Reuters providing it. That's not before the court on the record. But the obligation...
You're not
going to pay Moneyline
when Moneyline isn't providing you any service.
The obligation continues on the contract unless they breach.
Well,
but our license rights have been taken away, according to their theory, without any compensation. And that's why we know that that's not the proper interpretation of this. And Your Honor asked one other question
about...
You're
the one who slipped up. You were involved in this bankruptcy proceeding.
If I could make one final point, I know my time is up.
Sure.
The FedPAC case out of the Seventh Circuit is very closely analogous. And in FedPAC, it wasn't a footnote. The court acknowledged that when you purchase intellectual property, that you purchase it subject to extant licenses. That's Seventh Circuit authority in support of our proposition with respect to Novon. We ask that you affirm the injunction.
In support of Novon, did you say?
I'm sorry?
The district court case.
In support of Novon.
Well, you had brought up the issue with counsel,
yeah, okay.
But there was no circuit authority, and so...
So you had to sneak in a reference to Novon. Okay, thank you, Mr. Albers. Mr. Rothman, how much time does he have?
First, counsel's statement that the bankruptcy court order proving the Moneyline assumption of the contract made Bridge and its successors liable for the contract is wrong under both the order and the law. In fact, the order, consistent with the law, provided the opposite. It absolved Bridge upon the assignment
of any liability for that contract.
What about Mr. Albers' argument that let's accept that there's enough massaging of this data by Bridge to make it a compilation within the meaning of copyright law, and that because FutureSource is authorized to sell it, it really has been given a extensive license to this intellectual property. So, and then they, cite these cases, or the statute says intellectual property is like physical property, and it's like an estate in the divided ownership of the property, and therefore survives the. It's not an executory contract. It's an interest that survives the sale and bankruptcy.
There's simply no support for that. There's no support, even under non-bankruptcy law, for the notion that those types of affirmative obligations travel with any intellectual property license, even if this were one. And if they were going to take that position and try to put these extraordinary obligations upon Reuters...
Oh, so you're distinguishing between their right to use, I guess, the data they already received, and their right to demand a future...
Yes.
Intellectual property.
Had they shown up.
So you're saying...
That's why.
Yeah, the license of his existing intellectual property rather than intellectual property not yet created. That's
well, yeah. There was a very minor software component which did nothing other than allow them to manipulate or view the data. Had they shown up, they could have continued to use that as it existed at the time of the bankruptcy. Nothing gives them the right to compel future performance.
Right, that's what I was trying to get at. So you wouldn't have been able to sue them for infringing your copyright in that, even if that had been part of the assets you bought, because the license said you can't sue them for infringement. But the new stuff, is that the line you're drawing?
Well, it's not just old stuff, new stuff, but to the extent that there was a pure passive intellectual property license, such as the software, which was very narrow, and they had shown up and they hadn't consented, we couldn't have sued them for using that. But under 365N and other law, they have no right to compel a licensor to do anything. And again, had this case is a testament to the court's collateral attack cases, because if we were going to be subjected to that kind of threat or that kind of liability, that's exactly what a purchaser would want to know and is entitled to know before a sale closes. That's what you held in CGI and other cases. And finally, I know my time's up. Should
you can finish your sentence.
The impact of affirmance of this type of injunction here upon settled bankruptcy practice and settled bankruptcy law would be terrible, because what it would mean is that if asset purchasers could only get protection by means of rejection of contracts, then either debtors would be pressed to reject contracts routinely, which they are now deriving value from, or purchasers would reduce the purchase price. In either case, value to the estates would be lost and creditors would suffer. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much to both counsel.